right, so welcome to class. Glad to see you all here. I hope you had a very enjoyable snow days. Before we begin, I have a few announcements, and I'll turn it over if you have any announcement-like questions. First thing to note, a week from today is an exam in this room at the normal class time. If you have made arrangements with LNEC, you will need to contact them, preferably today, to arrange to take the test there. If you have extended time or need a reduced distraction environment or so on. So there's some information on the lecture notes about how to do that. If you have a university-excused absence next Monday and cannot take the exam at the normal time, there is a form linked to on the lecture notes where you can tell me about that so we can find an alternate exam time. So that's the exam coming up. We'll spend all of class on Friday talking about the exam. Depending on how quickly things go, we may even add a little bit of time on Wednesday, although probably not, probably just Friday on that. Hopefully it will not be particularly bad for you. Next thing to note, homework one, grades are released in gradebook. There will be actual scores associated with each assignment, as well as comments entered by whoever graded it. Even if you have full score, you should still look at the comments. Because if there are comments that say things that are not associated with a grade penalty, there's a chance we'll add those as grade penalties later on, so it'd be worthwhile understanding what those comments have to say. So I'd encourage you to look there. And a reminder, if you disagree with any part of your grade, you don't come talk to me, you don't send me email, you don't catch a TA in the hall, you send an email to the request tracker as described on the syllabus. So if you look at it and it just doesn't make sense that you got off points, that you got off or whatever, that's the place to take that up. One last comment. If you go to submit a homework assignment, every once in a while you will see a multi-part form not accepted error screen. The CS department servers don't know why this is happening, but there's an easy workaround. You go back to the homework page, you reload the homework page and submit again, and this goes away. Some of you have been emailing the email address on that error screen, which makes sense, but they are not the people that can solve it. So you just go back, reload the page, resubmit it. If that still doesn't work, email me rather than other people so that I don't have random system administrators coming up to me and saying, why do I have students emailing me? So there's that to note as well. And that is the announcements I had. Before we get into the lecture today, any questions, comments, concerns, or other things for me? Okay, then let us get into the lecture for today. So, we missed a class and a lab. The lab, I'm not vastly worried about. It was designed to reinforce a few concepts. I think we've reinforced them pretty well. You've been doing better at loops thus far this semester than students did last semester, as far as I can tell. But there is something that we were going to talk about last time that I want to talk about today. We may condense a little bit between today and Wednesday. But the first thing I want to talk about is the loop visualization tool. So on the lecture notes for today's lecture, which is lecture 15, you can find a link to the loop visualization tool. I wrote this one day when I was bored. It only took me a day, so it's probably not as fully featured as it should be. But what it allows you to do is type some subset of Java. You're only allowed to use ints and doubles. But you can type Java in there, and then it will sort of show you what the program does. Okay? So let's actually start with something very simple. Let's do a for loop. And let's put a system.println in it because we all love system.println. Okay, so I make a simple for loop, and then I say, use this code. And I scroll down or over, however, if you're not zoomed in, you don't actually need to scroll. And you'll see we have some nicely syntax highlighted version of that code. And there's some of it highlighted, and we'll talk about why. And then there is a timeline, and you will also see a representation of your computer's memory. Okay? Now, it calls it stack memory, and we'll see why when we talk about methods, but it's where we're storing information. Okay? So as I go along my timeline here, I can mouse over it and see what happens as the program runs. So I can see the first thing this program does is it creates a variable called I and sets it to 0. The next thing it does is checks if I is less than 10. The next thing it does is prints out the 0. The next thing it does is finish the loop, increment I, check if it's less than, print it out, finish the loop, increment I, see if it's less than, print it out, finish the loop, around and around and around and around. Okay, and I can scroll along and see what happens. Why would I want to do this? Often students have difficulty initially understanding what's going on in a loop. Okay, particularly when you put loops inside of loops, which we'll talk about some today. So I made this tool so that if you want to see what's happening in a loop, you can just come and try it out and see what it looks like. You sort of see the pattern of how it goes. Okay. So it's a tool. You're welcome to use it. I won't spend a lot of time walking through it, but if you ever are confused about what a loop's doing, you're welcome to try out the version of it here. You can't do strings. You can't do objects. You can just do println and numbers right now. I may at some point get bored another day and add more features, but right now it's just that subset of Java. But hopefully it'll give you a feel for how loops work. So it's there if you want it, available through my lecture notes. So, that's in your toolbox. You're welcome to grab it. But today I want to talk about break and continue and nested loops. So let's start with break and continue. In the textbook, section 4.8 is about break and continue. And pretty much all it says is break and continue exist and I encourage you not to use them. And it is the only textbook I know that says that. Break and continue are valuable tools. The textbook doesn't talk much about them. So we're going to talk about them, try to understand what they do. Continue means skip the rest of this pass through the loop, go to the next pass around the loop. Okay? So continue causes me to skip the rest of the current pass. Break causes me to skip the rest of the loop and go to whatever is after the loop. And that's all they do. They're sort of ways of short-circuiting, of ending a loop early. Frequently, you don't need them. Frequently, they aren't necessary. But sometimes they make your life pleasant. For example, one of the homeworks that's out right now has you read lines until you get to a blank line. A nice way to check if you got a blank line is to check if you have a blank line, and if you do, you break out of the loop. Okay? You can certainly do it other ways. You're welcome to solve it in other techniques if you want. But it can make your life easier having these tools at your disposal. So we'll talk about some code that uses them, show how it works some today. And we have some nasty code right here that uses break and continue and sort of exemplifies a lot of the things they do. We'll get to that in a moment, but before we get to all of this nastiness, we need to talk about what this means. We have officially talked about what it means, but we haven't really shown a loop inside a loop before. So my plan is to talk about loops inside of loops, then come back to this idea of break and continue. And then depending on how much time is left, hopefully we'll get to some information about files and how we can use them as well. So, that said, let's look at this piece of code right here. So I'd like you to just take a glance at this piece of code and figure out what you think it's going to do. I'd actually encourage you to turn to your neighbor and talk about what you think it's going to print. You could certainly run it, and then you would know it would print, but that wouldn't be an interesting learning exercise. So I'd encourage you to just look at it and try to figure out what do you think it's going to print. Just take a moment. We'll take some questions after that, and then we'll talk about it. Thank you. Okay, so, questions. Anybody want to volunteer a question? Yes?
Why do you need the x plus equals 1 outside of the for loop?
Why need x plus equals 1 outside loop? Outside while. Okay? Yes?
Can I be a different theory?
Can I be not I? Okay? Yes? What if we print x after x plus equals 1? Is there anything else, even vaguely uncertain, about this code? Yes?
Is plus I plus equals 1, is there like a standard
Is there a standard way to say I equals I plus 1? Good question. Yes?
Why did you make the first one a while instead of a
for? Why one a while? Sorry, why a while, not a for? Anything else? Okay, so let's take these one at a time. And I'll take them in a different order than you asked them. Let's start with the easy one. Can I be not I? Yes. Okay, let's do that. What should I call it? How about gastrointestinal? Hooray! Done. Okay, it doesn't matter what you name your variables. Now, is I or gastrointestinal a better name for this variable? Gastrointestinal is so much cooler, right? In general, you want your variables to communicate to whoever's reading their code what the purpose is. And if the only purpose of the variable is to count, typically we call it I. It's tradition. Is I a great name for it? Probably not, but it is traditional. Yes, and then yes. All right, so Eclipse has all kinds of special editing tools. If you highlight something and Shift-Alt-R, then they will all change at once. Shift-Alt-R. If you forget, you can right-click on it and go to, of all things, Refactor Rename. But it's probably just as easy to remember Shift-Alt-R as that you need to go to Refactor Rename. Okay, and I can just type the new name there. Other questions about this naming? Okay. Why do I need the x plus equals 1 outside the while? Let's see. Okay, what happens if I don't have it at all? To engineer briefly, what will this program do? Just actually talk to each other, make sure you agree. Okay, quickly, this will print less than 10 lines, between 10 and 20 lines. More than 1,000 lines. Yes, it will print more than 1,000 lines. Why? Because the while loop will run forever. Okay? So why do I need it? Because I want the while loop not to run forever. What would have happened if I put this in here? Okay, so if I put the x up inside the for loop, then x will increase 4 times each time through the while, once for every run of the for loop, and so we'll end up only printing out 4 lines. Okay, so where you place things changes what they do. So why did I have it where I did have it? I had it where I had it so it increased things. Now it's actually inside the while. I don't know if I wrote the question down wrong or if it was asked in an interesting way. If I put the x plus equals 1 outside the while loop will also run forever, because the while loop isn't changing its x. Okay? So sort of the right place to have it is inside the loop that is designed, that is based on it. But if you want a different functionality, you can put it somewhere else and get different behavior. More questions about that? Okay. What if we print? Again, let's see. Okay. If I put a system, what do we want to print here? How about we print something that looks different than the other one? How about x equals x? Okay. And I run this, and I see that after I print 0 through 3, I print x equals 1. Then after I print 0 through 3, I print x equals 2, and so on. Notice the x's are starting at 1, not 0, because I'm increasing the x before I print it out. So I see the increased values, not the pre-increased values, when I print. If I move, swap those two lines, I see x equals 0, x equals 1, x equals 2, and x equals 3 instead. Questions? Okay. Is there a standard way to say I equals I plus 1? Yes. And it's strange. It is I plus plus is the most common way. I say this is strange because there are four ways to say this, and only one of them is slower than the other three, and that's the standard. Okay? It's the standard because of a book written by Kernighan and Ritchie back in the 60s, late, I guess 70s really. And it is the standard ever after. So most often you will see I++. It is objectively the worst way to do that. Any other way is faster. I typically use plus equals 1 because it's easier to change my code. If I decide I want to increase by a bit different step, I just change one number. I know many professors who normally do plus plus I instead of I plus plus. It's mostly a matter of preference. But if there's a tradition, it's I plus plus. This actually comes to something interesting in general. There's often a trade-off between writing something that makes sense and writing something that's fast. Okay? It's faster to write plus plus I than I plus plus when you run it. But more people understand what you're doing if you do I plus plus than if you do plus plus I. And so there are people who say you should always write I plus plus because it's much more important for humans to understand what's going on than for your computer to save a few milliseconds. Differences of opinion. I don't think this one causes enough confusion to be worth worrying about. All right. Why a while and not a for? Good question. So, when we introduced fours, we talked about a for can be rewritten as a while. And this while loop is that kind of while loop, where it was before I added the println. Okay? Let's move the println up here so that it becomes that again, right? A for loop has an initialization, a guard, whatever it does, and an update. And so this while loop here looks just like a for loop. Why did I write it as a while loop? To remind you that while loops and for loops both exist, so we'd have the both on the board, so you could think about the both. No other reason. If I knew in advance I wanted the code to do this, I would have written a for loop. But I wanted to have both of them up there. And you can use either one. You can always use while. If you want to, you never have to write another loop. You can always use while loops. But for loops are common for this particular pattern. Any other questions about this code? Okay, let's throw in some breaks and continues. Let's say in here, if I equals 2, we're going to continue. Remember we said earlier, what does continue mean? Continue means skip the rest of this pass through this loop. So continue inside this for loop means if you get to this line, go back up to the end of the loop. So I would expect what this would do is made by for loop instead of printing out 0, 1, 2, 3, when I'll print out 0, 1, 3. Because on step 2, it's going to skip the print. And it's just going to go directly up to the next pass. And so I run it, and I see indeed that sort of removes the 2s. When I was 2, I skipped that step. Okay? You'll also notice that the continue skipped the rest of this loop, meaning the innermost loop in which I've defined. So the continue does not talk about the while. It talks about the for, because the for is on the inside. And that's just sort of all it does. There are ways of making continues talk about things outside, but they are not trivial, and we're not going to talk particularly about how to do them. Anytime you find yourself doing that, you're likely to be getting confused about your own code. And we'll delay getting confused about your own code until 2110 instead of 1110 as much as we can. But continue lets me skip the rest of this pass. It's also worth noting that it only skips what's after it, okay? So if I had something up here like print I equals before the continue and print I after the continue, I would see that in the 2 case, I print the I equals, and then I continue to the next pass through the loop. So I end up with this I equals 3. The first I equals on that line is printed when I was 2, but I never print the 2. The next one is printed when I is 3, and then I do print the 3. Questions about our continue here? Yes? Almost means go back to the beginning of the for loop. It actually means skip the rest of this pass through the for loop. So continue will go, the next line after continue is this, is the update step, as if there had been nothing after it, as if everything after it had been in an if statement that was false. So it's very similar to go up to the beginning, and it's reasonable to think of it in that term. Other questions? Okay. Now, I can, of course, make it skip different things on each step. Right? So I could say if I equals X continue, and then the first time through I skip 0, and the second time through I skip 1, and the third time through I skip 2, and so on. Okay? So I can do more interesting things than just skip one step. I can skip random steps. I can skip based on rather complicated sets of logic. It all just depends on when I decide to continue. Break. Break means I'm done with this loop. Okay? So I don't just skip the rest of this pass through the loop, but I skip out of the loop altogether. I go to whatever comes after the loop. So if I break out of the for loop, I will jump directly down to the x equals plus x line. I won't run the rest of the for loop, even if there are many iterations left. So I see that if I have this particular code, the first time through the loop, x is 0, I is 0, so I print I equals, and then I break out of the for loop. So I say I equals x equals 0. I broke out right away. The second time through the loop, x is now 1, I starts out at 0, they aren't the same, so I print I equals 0, I goes up to 1, they are the same, so I only print I equals, and I print the x equals. As you can see, each time through the loop, I break at a different time because of the different condition for my I equals x. Questions? Yes? Is there a way of doing this without continue break? Is that your question? Yes. Absolutely there is. There are always multiple ways to do everything. The typical other way is I make a Boolean variable that is, do I want to go again? And I would check if that Boolean variable was true or not and change its truth. Okay? So that's sometimes called a sentinel or a guard or a flag or something. And it's more flexible in the sense that I can break out of several layers of loops at the same time and so on. But it's also easier to get wrong. There's more pieces of code you have to fit together. There are other techniques as well. You can do it all with if statements or labeled breaks and things, but we're not going to. Yes?
What are you allowed to break?
When are you allowed to?
Yeah. So then where? Continue.
A break and a continue can show up if it's inside any loop. Do, for, while, those are our three loops. Break is also allowed inside a case statement and means something quite different there. Not quite different. It means essentially the same thing, jump out of the case statement to the end of it. Okay? Case statements aren't something I'm particularly concerned with you understanding, but you actually did see them last Wednesday, or 2 Wednesdays ago, I guess, almost 2 weeks ago. You can't put them if they aren't inside a loop. Okay? So I'm not allowed to type break down here outside of the loop because there is no loop to break out of. But inside any loop, I'm allowed to put what? Continue and break as many of them as I want. Any other questions about what? Break and continue. Yes?
So break skips the last part of the loop.
Break skips whatever's after it and all future iterations of the loop. It breaks out of the loop. Continue continues with the next iteration of the loop. Yes?
Do breaks only work with if statement?
You do not have to have a break if statement with a break, although it's kind of unusual not to. Okay? If I have a break that isn't in an if statement, then why did I have anything after it in the first place? Right? Because if I'm always ending the loop here, then it doesn't make sense to have anything after it. And as a matter of fact, for break, that won't work because, actually, both of them, it won't let me put anything after it because it says, if I mouse over this error, I will see the error message is unreachable code. Java recognizes that there is no theoretic way we could ever run this line of code. That probably means you did something wrong, so it's going to call it an error. And the same thing would happen if I put continue here. Okay? Because once I continue, I skip the rest of the code. Why was it there? So in practice, you always put them in if statements. Although there's no actual rule that says they have to be in if statements, I can, for example, put break or continue as the last statement in a loop. But why? Because it doesn't do much, right? So I put the last statement of a loop being a break, then the loop isn't a loop. It only runs once. And you can do that. You can even write if in terms of while if you really want to. Just put a break at the end of every one. But it's unusual. Other questions about break or continue? Okay. So you should understand how break and continue work. I should be able to show you code that uses break and continue, and you could talk intelligently about how it behaves. If you never write code that has break or continue, your life can proceed pleasantly, although I think you will find break in particular helpful in solving the best line part of the next homework. There are ways to do it without that, though, so you don't necessarily need to. All right. Let's briefly look here at our ugly code. Okay. So the piece of code that's on the website in our lecture notes for today has three for loops inside each other and then an if statement with a continue in it and a break outside. And I would suggest that it might be worth your while on your own time walking through this code and figuring out why it does what it does. Okay? Walk through it on paper. Make sure you understand why it prints the lines it prints and doesn't print other lines. It's intentionally a slightly confusing piece of code, and it has no obvious meaning. It's just designed to be an exercise, an opportunity to make sure you really understand how loops work inside loops, how break and continue work. So at its basic level, it's going to print every combination of I, J, and K, except because we're continuing in K equals I, we will never see I and K the same. And because we're breaking when J equals I, we will only see J's that are less than or equal to I's, because if J ever got bigger than I, we would break. And you're welcome to walk through that on your own and make sure it really makes sense. But hopefully there's no piece of this we haven't already seen. It's just a messy way of putting it together. Any other questions about loops inside loops, breaks, or continues before we switch to a different topic? Yes?
So the continue like makes it go back to the top, right?
Yep, of the current loop. I feel like there was another half of that question that didn't get asked.
I just don't want to understand the purpose of continuing.
Ah, why would I continue? Let's suppose, for example, I wanted to add a big list of numbers, but I actually wanted to ignore all the negative numbers. Okay? So I can make a loop that's going to add all the numbers, and the first line of loop could say, if the number's less than zero, continue. Right, and then I'll just automatically skip them. I could just as easily do that with an if and then a great big else that has all the rest of my logic in the else. But that's ugly. It's got more curly braces. It's just a little cleaner to put a continue instead. So that's its most common case, is to skip the weird cases, the corner cases, the stuff we don't care about. Yes?
When would you use a do for your statement?
When would I use a do? I wouldn't. That's a bit of an exaggeration. So do loops are just like while loops, except they always run at least once, even if the condition is false. The most common reason to do that is you set the value of the condition in the loop. And so there are a few input validation codes and things that use do loops, but even most of those are not written with do loops. They're usually written with while loops, because you usually want a different message the first time than the second. We will never expect you to write a do loop, although we do expect you to be able to read how they work. I don't know if that actually answered your question. It did? Okay. Other questions about loops, breaks, continues? Okay, then let's switch to talking about files. There's this piece of code on the lecture notes, and we'll walk through what it does. Okay. But before we do that, I want to talk about the concept of a file. We're all familiar, I think, with the idea you could save files and load files and give files to people and get the DMCA upset with you because you have files you're not supposed to and so on. But what are they? Under the hood, a file is just a big list of bytes, actually, which is essentially a character. Okay. And that's all they are. In Java, we can use files much like we would use system.out and system.in. We can read from files just like we'd read from the keyboard on the console. We can write to files just like we'd write to the console. Okay. But there's special things to do it. So in order to read from a file, I have to make a file object. Like all other objects, we make it by saying new file. We give a file name in there, okay? And then we can use that file the same way we would use system.in. So just like we might make a scanner for system.in, we can make a scanner for that file object. And then once we have the scanner, all of the scanner methods work. The next line and the next int and the next double and the next boolean and the has nexts of all of those as well work exactly the same way they would for a keyboard. Instead of waiting for you to type, it's just going to look at the file and see if there's something there. Okay? So it's a way of sort of getting the user out of the mix, remembering things in a file. If we want to write to a file, instead of using a file object, for various reasons, we use what's called a print writer. Again, it's just an object. It acts like system.out. But instead of writing to the screen, it writes to this print, this file that we tell it the name of. So we can use println on it. When you're writing files, you also have to close them manually. Otherwise, they sometimes don't save. Okay, so close is similar to the idea of save, although not quite the same. So we have these techniques for both reading and writing, reading from and writing to files. Pardon me. Why would we do this? Well, let's actually just try running this program right now as it stands first. Okay? I run this file, and I'll see the first thing it asks me is, what is something you would like to remember or worth remembering? Okay? The reason it goes directly to that is I have this line right here. If the file exists, I make my file object and then say, is it already there? I haven't made a scanner to read from it yet, so I can check if it's there or not. I can't read from it if it isn't there. So if it is there, I'm going to read from it. It wasn't there yet. So instead, we jump down here. We make a second scanner for the keyboard. An aside here. I told you earlier, only make one scanner per input source. Because two of them might fight. If I have two people trying to read the keyboard, one person might get the keystroke the other person needed. Here, I have one scanner for the keyboard and a different scanner for a file, and that's fine. They're reading from different sources. They aren't going to compete. Different pools of resources. Okay, so I make one scanner for each of those. I ask them what a file line is. So when I run this, it's going to ask me for something. And what's something worth remembering? I am amazing. Definitely worth remembering. Okay? And it prints that. It has a println with the line I typed, but it doesn't print it to the system.out. It prints it to this file called remembrance.txt. Okay? So if I were to go and look inside my project, the file is actually there, although you can't see it initially. Eclipse doesn't immediately show you everything that's there. I have to refresh my project, and I will see there's this file. Okay, it has been saved onto my computer's hard drive. It will be there the next time I turn it on. And I can change this file now. Okay, I can change it however I want, and once I save that file, I've changed what's in the file. Now if we go back to our file read-write program and run it again, the first thing it does is it tries to read the file, and it reads, I am very extremely amazing, because I am, right? And then it lets me type something new that I want to type. Okay, I can lick my elbow. That's the definition of very extremely amazing, right? And now when I run it again, it remembers I can lick my elbow, right? Whatever I tell it to save in the file is what it gets the next time around. So this is the basic idea of how a lot of programs will remember things like your preferences, your name, as well as files that you've saved. We put them all in files somewhere in your computer so we can remember them later. At the most basic level, we can write them like this, just straight text. A lot of computers will actually have a special file format. Because they're writing files, they're only meant to be read by themselves. It doesn't have to make sense to a human. It only has to make sense to the computer. So they'll come up with different ways of storing the information that are faster or easier for the computer to parse quickly, or a variety of reasons they might do that. And that's why we have so many file formats. If we look at a JPEG, for example, it looks like absolute gibberish if we tried to open it in a text editor that we could see letters. Because it's not designed to be read by humans. It's designed to be read by programs that know how to turn that description into a bunch of discrete cosine transforms that then turn into a bunch of pixels. Okay? It's input for a very specific kind of function. So as we're writing files, they're all just this. They're all just put characters into some plot spot on your computer. But by formatting them differently, we can get different kinds of features and functionality out of them. There's also whole massive kinds of files called databases that have all kinds of special features to them and so on. But under the hood, this is all they are. It's just a way of storing stuff somewhere on your hard drive and then reading it back in afterwards. Any questions about files? Yes?
Why doesn't it print out the other things that it like saves?
Good question. Thank you for bringing that up. When I write to a file, I erase the rest of the file. Very sad. There are ways of not doing that, but they're kind of involved. So we're not going to talk about them. In general, when I write a file, I write the whole file. This can be dangerous, right? Don't play with writing files and then pick some file you actually care about, because it's gone. and it's not coming back, right? So when you're playing with writing files, you want to be careful. You only want to pick names that you don't care about, right? Because if you change what's in a file, you can't even undelete it or take it out of the recycle bin because it didn't go anywhere. You just changed what's inside of it. This is part of the reason that for most of the rest of the semester we'll deal with reading files. We'll almost never deal with writing them again. The tool's there. You can use it if you want. It's worth knowing that it's there. But there's lots of ways to make it break. And so we'll mostly just deal with reading from files for the rest of the semester. And we will deal with reading them for the rest of the semester because they're useful things to have our program be able to do. Other questions? Okay. We've got a minute left, but I cannot get to the next point in a minute. So when we come back on Wednesday, we will talk some more about arrays and a little bit more about files. See you then.